This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Welcome to In the News This Week, the podcast from some of the team who've worked on Have I Got News For You.
I'm Emerald Paston.
I'm Mike Raymond.
I'm Queenie Miller.
And I'm Jack Harris.
We'll be taking you through the big and not so big stories in the news this week when the TV show can't. Think of it like this. If the main show is a British couple holidaying in Tuscany, then we're the Ibiza final boss.
What guy?
Our icon, our idol.
Are we going to...
All of us.
Are we going to explain that?
Why don't you explain it, Mike? I feel like you're best placed.
I only became aware of it today.
I'm not sure I know what we're talking about.
Oh, this is incredible. The tables have turned. Queenie Miller.
It's the first time I've not known anything ever.
Yeah. I can't believe the fringe has kept you in this bubble outside of Ibiza Final Boss.
I was going to say, ironically, it's about a great fringe.
Yeah. Okay. So
the Ibiza Final Boss is a man who dared to go on holiday. He has an unfortunate condition where his features are far too close together, including his haircut and moustache, and he got videoed. And then this is what happens against his will. He's gone viral.
But his haircut is like ultimate pudding bowl haircut.
Mm. Yeah.
When you said his features were too close together, I genuinely thought you meant Keir Starmer. It's like, why is he on holiday again?
Keir Starmer would be like the Beamish Museum final boss.
The what museum?
Beamish. You guys don't know about the Beamish Museum?
Beamish Museum. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Come
is
on,
that
mate.
Is that the Pencil Museum?
No, it's like the Pencil Museum on steroids.
That's nice.
Yeah.
What's there?
It's got tractors and stuff. You can live oldie worldy and have people dressed up. And they
it's
even
like
have
a valley, right, that they've turned into an old fashioned world.
Yeah. So it's got a reform MP.
Ibiza Final Boss would probably still fit quite well in there because it doesn't look like he comes from the medieval times. With his
You're
haircut.
Right. Dressed in the right clothes.
Yeah.
He'd fit right in.
Well, it's a high octane start to the podcast.
Yeah.
Well, hello, everyone. How are we all?
Good.
Has everyone recovered from the fringe? Queenie, you've been there a whole month.
Yeah, and I'm completely normal now. I'm back. It's been about 12 hours since I finished my last show. I'm 100%.
It's going to be a great record.
It's going to be a great record. No, I'm really excited to be back. Yeah. And that's the first sincere thing I've ever said.
Wow.
And just to follow, if we're doing sincerity, I would just say, because you won't say it yourself, went up to Edinburgh, went to see some of Queen's shows, absolutely smashed it.
Mm-hmm.
Got some award nominations in there for some of your shows.
Yeah.
I know you're not going to say this. Do you know what? I'm only being nice because I know how unbelievably awkward it makes you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And upsetting it is for you. So
Mike didn't say any of this in person while we were in Edinburgh. I was like, oh, that was shit.
Yeah, I actually booed all your acts.
Oh, you were the one we had to get out of the venue.
Yeah.
The security.
Yeah. No, it was very good.
Should we get into round one?
Yeah.
So one of the big stories this week involves groups of angry British people getting violent at hotels. Now, I'm not talking about the sunbed fights currently happening around the Costa del Sol, but the immigration protests outside hotels that are housing migrants in the UK.
I mean, the irony being of them going there and telling people to go home.
I know.
I think we got to start calling these mobs instead of protests.
They are mobbing.
Don't know, I feel like there's a bit of organisation that is involved with the protest.
To be fair, Richard Tice from Reform came out on Friday and said everyone should protest in a friendly way.
Oh.
So you should just say, please, can you go back home? Thank you. Like that.
Mike, how have the different parties been responding to these protests and to the conversations about immigration this week?
It's all been pretty, I would say, fairly depressing and predictable. Also, it's been a pretty horrible weekend. It's made everyone feel uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing you don't want to do is come out on national TV and tell everyone that there's a crisis and Britain's on the verge of societal collapse, which is obviously exactly what Nigel Farage went out and did on Tuesday with his big speech. I don't know if you saw the screens. He had like airport style screens where he showed where flights would be going, where he'd deport people to.
What about Ascension Island? Doesn't that solve everything? This island that we've all never heard of before in the Atlantic that haven't agreed to receive any of our asylum seekers.
Yeah.
We've just said we'll send them there. Yeah. That's what Farage's done.
Nice.
Great.
Sleazy jet.
Nice.
It's funny seeing some of the policies that they came out with today. Like one of them is like paying countries to take back migrants.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And one of those countries would be Afghanistan, which they were asked about. And you could just imagine if that was a policy that came out with, it would instantly be like Labour are paying the Taliban. Which is essentially what it will be if they do that.
Yeah.
And it's like they kind of just skate over that. And it's always fun. We've talked about it a couple of times in the podcast where like slowly but surely like policies are being pulled out of Farage and people start to go, well,
where are they being pulled out from?
Match up. Yeah, that's it. That's why no one wants to see them, because of where they're getting pulled out.
So Farage, he had a new slogan. So he saw this. Operation Restore Justice.
Really bad Marvel film there.
No, it's like confusing because he's saying Operation Restore Justice, but Farage's whole thing is based on being able to get around the judges and deport whoever he wants. So really it should be called Operation Abandon Justice.
Distort Justice.
Yeah, yeah, he wants to get rid of Human Rights Act and fly asylum seekers out abroad. I wonder where we've heard that before.
What I love about that is the Tories being like, we had that. That was us. That was us. And it's like, yeah, we were the ones who were going to be terrible to migrants.
Yeah, you know? They're not as outraged about the wrong thing. They're not being like, whoa, 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 whoa. What do you mean? Yeah. They're like, that was actually our idea.
Did you see as well, like Farage has said before that mass deportations is a political impossibility before. That's what he used to say about when the Tories were doing. Now suddenly he's gone, actually, it is possible. And you think, well, where have they got this new information from? And they showed it at the conference where the question got asked, can we deport 600,000 people across 5 years in government? And the question got asked to the reform chair, whose expert opinion was totally, yeah. And then that was it. They just moved on. Yeah. And you think that is the sort of attention to detail which you need to become a government, basically, isn't it? Yeah.
One other thing to flag from this anti-migrant protest hailstorm. As picture researcher, I wouldn't be doing my job if I wasn't looking at everyone's Twitter. And Robert Jenrick has seemingly accidentally gotten himself into a bit of hot water. He was pictured with a neo-Nazi leader at one of these protests in Epping, and he posted the photo himself.
It's one of his oldest friends.
The subheading to this headline is, oops.
It is funny that Robert Jenrick just jumping onto all these things, you know, now he's like talking about how much he loves St. George's flag. But I don't know if you saw, there's the Kemi Badenoch interview that happened this weekend, where she was kind of talking about the fact that she's like, look, I don't think Robert Jenrick's coming for my job. I think like some other people might be talking about it.
There's so many other people who might be coming for my job.
My favourite line of hers in that interview was that she was talking about all the kind of negative press she gets. And she said, the price of success is that you get haters. So presumably she's still waiting on those haters to arrive because there hasn't been any success whatsoever yet.
No. I feel we should also point out, we haven't pointed this out enough, like in amongst all the ineptitude from the Tories and Reform, Labour have sort of ceded the upper ground to Reform yet again. They've doubled down on, well, what we're doing is working, even though it's clearly not. Mm. Now, there's a survey this week, people were asked how they felt the government was doing on immigration.
Love these.
Well, first, like, 39% of people said immigration was the most important issue to them at the next election. So that's, to put that in perspective, the economy is on 25% in the middle of a cost of living crisis. So people have strong views on it. And I think, you know, I think it's fair to say there are a number of people who are upset because they feel like, just give it a bit of balance here. They feel like they, you know, they're seeing things like it's hard to get hospital appointments. Things have, you know, not improved. Public services have degraded. But unfortunately, what no one seems to want to do, or certainly the government don't want to do, is challenge Reform's assertion that this is because of illegal immigration. Mm-hmm. Even though I think illegal immigration is, I think it was 44,000 people last year out of 900,000 people who emigrated to the UK. So
yeah, it's like 4%, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think, of the actual number.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 71% of people polled said that Labour were doing very badly on immigration. And 56% of Labour voters said Labour were doing badly. So they're like, they're in massive trouble here.
The one thing I read that they'd been doing this week is they've begun placing adverts in France about the one in, one out treaty.
I did see
basically
that.
Basically going around pasting up some adverts.
It sounded like just those going, I tell you what, we'll get you. Which you think that's the exactly the sort of process is going to work, isn't it?
If you really want Labour to do something about the illegal immigrants in hotels, just tell them they're all pensioners. They'd have them out there in a jiffy. They'd be gone.
While all these politicians are worrying about the UK's beaches, Queenie, are there any MPs who have actually been enjoying the seaside this summer?
Yes. the story here is some people think that there's been a bit of a hypocrisy with Rayner buying a third home, a beachfront property, when she is proposing a premium second home council tax sort of uplift in the autumn budget.
I was so confused by this story.
I feel like, come on, guys, she's housing secretary. She needs to test drive some houses.
If anyone gets houses, 100%.
On the Tory side, they're taking this as an opportunity to be like, you shouldn't be doing this because it's attacking people's freedoms of having a second home. Mm-hmm. That second home premium policy that everyone says is hers, that she's pushed through, which she has, was originally Sunak's. Mm. And that was brought in under Boris Johnson's levelling up policy. So they're suddenly being like, actually, hang on a second.
Yeah.
I think there's a bit of the media looking a bit of the wrong way here. Most of the headlines have been like, it's a scandalous third home. It's like, no, it's actually quite normal.
Or I saw one saying she's building a property empire.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was Richard Tice. Richard Tice again. He's all over the news this week.
But he said it in a friendly way.
Exactly.
I mean, it's really interesting because the story was broken in the Mail on Sunday, who said it's the third home. As you pointed out, she's got her council house. She's got a Grace and Favours home, which she doesn't own. She can't sell.
Yeah.
And then she's bought this third property, which she's well within her rights to do. Even The Spectator wrote an article this week saying this is bullshit.
So which is mental.
When The Spectator are going, you know, to be fair to a Labour MP, given like you could do a whole series of location based on the Conservative front bench's property portfolio. So yeah, I think, people in glass houses in their third homes shouldn't throw stones.
But also it's like, this is the thing I don't get, is because she's buying a second home, so she is paying that council tax.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
So many things to attack Angela Rayner and Labour for, like the vanity photographer, the actual inability to do anything that's made any difference to anyone's lives positively.
And I love the Telegraph, like, clutching at straws, desperately trying to get something on her. They spoke to a person nearby who said, oh, she's been there some time, like she's been there for a few months. And then they added, I haven't seen her here personally. I haven't seen her anywhere. She's probably too busy, isn't she? Which you're like, it's probably a good sign that they're saying she's too busy working that she can't be there.
That's not true, though, because Angela Rayner's never just on the lash somewhere. The one thing they could have picked her up on.
That's why the House of Commons have bars, mate.
It genuinely wouldn't surprise me if it turned out the third home was just a sandcastle.
I think this is the reason why the story's gone a bit big, because the pictures are striking. It's her on a beach in her dry robe with her massive glass of wine, sitting in a dinghy, having a vape. Like, they're great pictures.
They are fantastic. Presumably as taken by her vanity photographer.
Yes.
I'm just waiting for Ed Davey to do a question in the Commons about the dinghy. And where did you get it from? Looks really good quality. Looks really...
Ed Davey's like kicking himself.
That's my thing. That's my thing.
Yeah,
I love the idea that he also sees the picture of her sitting down in the dinghy and goes, oh shit, that's how you stay on it. Right.
In other news, our favourite failed mean girl, Sergei Lavrov, has been doing interviews with US media defending his actions in Ukraine. Jack, presumably Trump is hard at work following through on those peace talks last week and definitely not threatening his own country with military intervention, right?
Yeah, he's still going big on scattergun approach.
Is that what they're arming everyone with? Scatterguns.
yeah, that's it. Well, they're literally now armed. They've armed the National Guard. But it's the classic Oprah technique of like, you get the National Guard, you get the National Guard, you get the National Guard, because it's literally just like one of his threats now. Like it's like someone, an Illinois J.B. Pritzker, who he was laying into for being too big, which is always
like
fun.
Tall, like
no, just being like on the larger side, basically.
Oh.
But he was like, oh well, maybe I'll just send the troops in. Like, it's like his new threat is, well,
what?
I'll send the troops in.
Which because he's too fat?
To put him on a diet?
No, not because of, not to police the fast food outlets in Chicago.
Make a chain, like an iron dome around the Arby's. Maybe that'd be a good dieting, like send in the troops. They come to my house and take all the trans fats out my fridge.
But then obviously, so you've got that, and that's going on. And then he's got the Ukraine stuff, which we didn't hear a lot about what was said behind the kind of meeting between Trump and Putin. But we're starting to feel like you get a bit more, because one of the things he said today was that he reckons Putin has put off meeting Zelensky for this summit because he doesn't like him.
Are we sure about that? Is there any evidence?
I think they're really good mates.
Yeah,
I know. It's these kind of revelations.
That intuition that the Donald's got.
But I love it when he added this little detail. He goes, he said, I have people I don't like. I don't like to meet with them. And I think, like there's Tiffany, there's Eric, there's Donald Trump Jr. Like that list of people that he never wants to have to hang out with.
He sent the National Guard to all their homes.
I do feel like that explanation, I have people I don't like, I don't like to meet with them. I feel like that's the sort of explanation you give to like your 6-year-old child about why like... mummy doesn't like to hang out with daddy's mates or something. It's like not, it's not the explanation you give for like
integral international peace summit.
One of the biggest wars in Europe for the last 75 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did anyone see JD Vance's take on how to end it?
No, I really don't want to hear it though.
Well, you're going to hear it. He was using World War II as an example for how to end the Ukraine conflict, because he said World War II ended with some kind of negotiation, which is an interesting new history lesson.
Japan did really consent to having two atomic bombs dropped.
Oh yeah, it's the first time I've heard atomic bombs being described as negotiations, basically.
Right.
Didn't a bullet negotiate with Hitler's brain? That's what ended World
War
II.
Yeah. It was a very short negotiation.
But very effective.
Yeah.
Another thing I saw with the Ukraine thing is another tactic. They're saying that Trump's stopping Ukraine using long-range missiles to fire into Russia in an attempt to entice Putin to the negotiating table.
Yeah.
Again, it just sounds like a cat that won't come inside. Exactly. Yeah. It is literally getting treats to come get in house.
Vladimir.
Or it's like, you know, trying to entice a Labrador into a bath. I think that's a sort of similar.
And then it's putting its front hands out.
But yeah, its hands fun, won't go in.
That's actually quite apt, because my granddad used to have a Labrador and he trained it to go to the toilet outside, but his eyesight was going. And we went up to see him, and this Labrador's like the fattest Labrador you've ever seen in the world. We're like, how has this Labrador got so fat? And then he'd take it out for a walk, and the dog had learned how to pretend to go to the toilet. But because my granddad's eyesight was quite bad, he just thought it was going for a wee, and he was giving it a treat. We went for a walk. It went for like 35 wees.
The most incontinent fat dog you've ever seen.
And genuinely, that is such an apt analogy for Trump and Putin, because Trump's like, look, he's doing it. He's doing it. I'll give him a little treat.
Welcome back to In the News This Week. It's now time for round two, where you've each brought a story from the past week that you think would be perfect for round two of the TV show. So, Jack, what have you got for us this week?
So, I'm picking up a story that Gen Z are applying for office jobs because they're lonely, apparently.
Aww.
Queenie's obviously our resident Gen Z.
God, I'm getting drafted in again to just speak for everyone.
No, I'm not asking. I've worked with you in an office. And
it's hell.
I've seen people get lonely because...
Oh, that's so kind, Jack. I try really hard to sort of be an isolating presence.
Yeah. Create a hostile atmosphere.
When you're around Queenie, you feel more lonely than you've ever felt in your life.
Guys, this is so sweet.
But I really liked the quote they got for it, which was like, they asked the Gen Zer, they were like, why are you applying for jobs? You know, and they said, I specifically applied for roles with a physical office where I have supportive colleagues and can socialise at lunchtimes. And I thought all that did is it really shows that they've never worked in an office.
Yeah, totally.
Because they're looking for supportive colleagues and a lunch break. What sort of mad world are they living in?
Definitely not applying to work in television.
If that's what we're aspiring to now, that's the ceiling. We're like, can't buy a house, can't really have kids. Yeah. Let's have an office job. That's really sad.
So what I wanted to do is, it's a quick game.
Oh, yes.
Because the press are like obsessed. They come up with all these phrases about Gen Z work times. Okay. So I'm going to tell you some real and I'm going to tell you some fake Gen Z work time.
I'm excited about this.
Me too.
We're going to see if you fall down the mountain of fakery, which is why I'm calling it Gen Z or Gen Scree.
I don't know what scree means.
What's scree?
Scree being small rocks that slip down the side of a mountain.
Jack,
there we go.
That was bad.
Such a neek.
You're such a neek, Jack.
That was an avalanche of nerdiness.
Diggory, can you cut out me having to explain what scree is? Thanks very much. That's the producer. The producer will cut that out and you can all go, yeah, that's a great title. Gen Scree, Gen Z.
Weirdly, he's not responding to you in any way whatsoever.
So the first one I'm going to ask, right? Is this real or fake Gen Z work time? Mm-hmm. Task masking.
Isn't that a show on...
Task masking.
Channel 4.
With Greg Davis.
Yeah, that sounds like something like a journalist would make up.
I'm going to say yes, because it might be something like pretending to do a job when you're actually not.
Task masking is a real term, and it's called like going the extra mile to make it like you're working hard while you're actually hardly working. So, Queenie, you're exactly right in your definition. And examples they give are...
Angela Rayner.
Yeah, there we go. Examples are sitting on a dinghy vaping, whilst emailing. No, examples are walking around the office, pretending to take calls and typing audaciously loud. Not my words, that's the description.
Audaciously.
Which is great. I love that idea.
Yeah.
Okay, next one. Flag haggling.
This is what they're doing outside the hotels in Epping.
That's how they get so many of them.
Flag haggling.
I don't think you can call someone a flag haggler anymore, Jack, mate, to be honest with you.
Well, you're right. It is a fake term. Flag haggling is actually what Robert Jenrick has been up to. It's when you try to convince Tory MPs to make you leader by showing how much you love flags.
Very nice.
Guinea pig commuting.
I don't know. That feels like going to work in London generally and taking.
Yeah, I feel like a guinea pig when I'm on the tube.
Yeah.
You know?
So are we saying real or fake term?
Travelling around a massive experiment. Real.
Okay. It's a fake term. Guinea pig commuting is actually when you jump on the bus with your pet on the way to Aalborg Zoo.
Is it a commute when you love it, Jack? Is it?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. When you're going off to just toss your guinea pig into the lion's mouth, which I think is how they do it. Career lily padding.
It sounds like a very HR term.
Yeah.
I think that's one of Sting's children, career lily padding.
I'm going to say fake.
Yeah, I'm going to say child of Sting, secret answer C.
Okay, this is real. Basically, they're replacing the career ladder and instead of taking your path, you can jump to whatever opportunity fits best at the moment.
That sucks. I stick with the ladder.
Yeah.
You can't pull them up after you, which I thought was the point of going on the career ladder.
Yeah. The whole point is you want to make it so it's impossible for anyone to come up after you. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Good point, Queenie.
Thank you.
Removing the cucumber.
That's not a work thing.
Mate, what you do in the privacy of your own home?
Listen, no, it's not. It's just an A&E doctor's strangest day of work. That's all that is.
Jack's text to his emergency contact.
I'm going to say real.
And conscious. That's me. That's Freudian slip. Wow.
Where are we going here?
No, sorry. Conscious unbossing. Conscious unbossing.
That sounds so wanky and stupid that I think it's real.
Yeah, me too.
Wouldn't you just say quitting?
Mike, you're exactly correct. Conscious unbossing is taking steps to avoid becoming middle managers and staying as individual contributors.
I've been unconsciously unbossing my whole life.
Well, I feel like Queenie was born into the world consciously bossing people around. So,
yeah.
So many compliments today.
But they did a really insightful bit of research where they said that 68% of Gen Z said the only reason they would pursue management is for the title and for more money.
That's unusual.
That's everyone's reason.
What else do you do it for?
They do it for the love of the game. All us old people. Yeah, I don't. I was like, what are the other 32% getting into management for?
I did some research into Gen Z speak accidentally.
Oh,
did you know?
Did you read a text from Queenie?
Yeah, no, I definitely don't do that. She doesn't have my number.
No.
Not with
for good
the
reason.
Yeah, the all the abuse. No, I consciously made an effort not to speak to any Gen Zers at Edinburgh. And then on the train home, I sat next to a, I'll say a very nice Gen Zer.
Oh my God, you're
she,
so
she gave
old,
me some,
Mike.
Some,
yeah, okay,
some, and she gave me some good Gen Z lingo.
Oh.
So here's one. If you want to leave a party early, you hit the eject. Yeah.
So what's happened here, Mike, is someone has seen you hook, line and sinker and thought, I'm going to give some made up terms to this old man. He's going to know what he's talking about.
If you don't stop insulting me, I'm going to hit the eject.
Oh, no, Mike.
And you'll be sorry.
What else, Mike? What other ones?
Shrekking?
I have heard of that.
Have you seen this?
No, what is it?
I've never heard of it, but this generation has such a deep connection with Shrek that I'm not surprised that that would be a word.
It's when you go out with someone who's uglier than you, but then they sort of are the one who ends up ending the relationship and you got Shreked.
I actually think that's great. That's brilliant.
That's so specific. Sometimes we don't need slang words for things. But in this case, I think that we do.
I think that's right. Anyway, so I'm Gen Z competent. You know, you put a sticker on a boiler. You're like, yeah, this is safe. I've had my Gen Z competency test.
Aww.
I always trust people's grasp of popular culture by the stickers that we've been given in terms of qualifications.
Right. You know, you could just go hit the eject with that kind of chat.
Oh, okay. Gosh, that's the third time he said it.
I'm so pleased with that.
Well, thank you, Jack, for that story. That was enlightening.
Not as enlightening as Mike, but that's you know, what can I do?
Thank you.
Queenie, what's your round two story?
My round two story, I'm just going to go straight into it.
Do it.
Sweden's Way Out West Festival allows fans to pledge their kidney for a ticket. Wow. Now, this is a bit of me, literally. This year, tickets to Way Out West Festival, which showcases artists like Charlie XCX, Chappell Roan and the Pet Shop Boys, sold out in record time, which is, that's one mystery. But organisers say a common phrase they hear is, I'd give a kidney for a ticket. So they're getting them to put their money where their mouth is or where their vital organs are.
No one has ever said that.
Yeah, people say, I'd sell a kidney for that.
Yeah, I'd give my kidney.
You need to speak to more Gen Zers, Mike. You can't just take a sample of one.
Oh, I thought it was like, I'd give my left nut.
That's next year, Mike. That's what you get. They're doing left testicle for next year.
Okay.
Kidney first.
So are they taking it out when you arrive?
No.
All right.
I wish it was something for like organ harvesting. This is why I'm interested in the story. But I kept reading and it said, individuals who sign up for organ donation will be put in the ballot for a fittingly named kidney pass that gives them access to the whole weekend of the festival.
So if you say you're a donor,
if you sign up for organ donation, four tickets. Yeah. Free tickets.
Queenie's jumped the gun. That's why she's doing the show from an ice bath.
Yeah. I actually donated both of my kidneys, twice the chance. So fingers crossed for me, guys. I've got a little game.
Oh, wow.
Can you tell me what things people have given for a chance to see their favourite acts?
Oh, God. Oh.
What could members of the public in 1990s LA trade for tickets to music concerts and sports matches?
Their civil rights?
So close, honestly.
Really topical Rodney King reference there.
Yeah, I was going to say, straight in with it.
But really, to some people, the answer to this, it would be that.
Your house.
The answer is firearms.
Oh.
So it is kind of the rights. This was as part of an effort to get weapons off the street. Weapons were taken by police with no questions asked and destroyed, which I think we could do again, like London Festival, Knife Amnesty.
Also, there's a lot more weapons on the streets in America now. Thanks to the National Guard.
Yeah.
What did Gillian from Oldham give to see Oasis this year?
I'm going to go house again. I'm going to go house.
You're trying to get rid of your second home and avoid the tax. Is that right, Jack? Where can I give my house?
Also, where is this house? Because I feel like some houses, they wouldn't make up the ticket price.
Did you get a mad tattoo or something?
So the answer is actually her labour. She initially failed to get tickets, but then applied for a job working at the merch stand at the venue because it had a full view of the stage.
Nice. Very savvy.
She gave off her labour. I thought it meant like her baby.
And then what did Andy Byron and Kristen Cabot give for a concert in Boston this year?
In Boston.
This is a story we've talked about before.
Oh, is it?
Mm.
Their child? Different labour laws in the US.
They kind of gave their labour because it was their jobs. This is the Coldplay Kiss Cam couple.
Because
they got fired.
Very good. I enjoyed that.
Thank you, Queenie.
Sorry?
It was very fun. Festive end to the summer.
Give me your kidney away. The most festive end to a summer you could possibly have. Yeah.
What an end to the series. That's how we fund the next series.
Have you guys not already given your kidney away?
I've given both of my kidneys away, guys.
But I get it for the podcast. That was part of my contract.
When I signed mine, I gave away your other kidney, Jack. So.
I did the same. What are we going to do?
So I'm one kidney.
You owe them a kidney.
I've got to steal a kidney from somebody.
You've got to find a kidney.
Get yourself down to Allberg Zoo.
I'm going to start a music festival.
It all makes sense.
So, Mike, what story have you got for us?
My story is the story of 8-year-old Lenny from Essex. I'm sure you've seen this in the news, guys. His well-documented addiction to eating jacket potatoes.
Yes.
This is a legend in the making.
How old's Lenny?
Lenny's 8 years old. Aww. How many jacket potatoes do you think Lenny's eaten already in his short life?
He's counted his whole life.
You can't do more than 3 a day.
No, that's not true.
Huh?
I mean, when can you start eating solids? Like when you're like...
Two?
Two? Something so let's like say that. Two till eight, six. Let's have it happen. He's had two every day. So what's that? That's 6 times 350.
Grab a teacher here.
Times by two. So 700 times by six is what? 4,200.
I really enjoyed that.
Is that the sort of fun answer you want, Mike?
yeah, that's exactly why I brought it up. You've gone way too hard there, Jack. He's eaten an estimated 2,500 jacket potatoes.
That's quite a lot.
It's still pretty good.
Even if you start at two, that's still more than one a day.
Wow.
Yeah, it's over one a day.
I have never had more respect for anyone.
But his parents told the Mirror, we weren't too worried because we thought potatoes are quite healthy and he did loads in sport. But he had low energy. He'd often go to bed at 7 p.m. and he had a fidgety leg.
Oh, no.
So when does over excessive jagged potato use and like their parents just being neglectful sort of overlap.
They resolved it. How have they resolved it?
And they put beans on his jacket potato.
They put beans on his salad.
Chips.
Hypnotherapy.
Oh wow. My God. What?
Have used
to stop him eating jacket potatoes? Or...
Now he eats up to 24 different foods. But Lenny's mum again, she told the Mirror, it might run in the family. My brother only used to eat KFC and a donut every single day.
They're keeping hypnotists afloat, I feel, this family.
Do you reckon that was the first thing they tried?
Yeah.
They weren't just try some foods, or they weren't, you know, they weren't like, maybe he's allergic to something. They were like, hypnotise him, put him under,
and it's worked.
It's the only way.
Yeah. Do you reckon you eat more than 24 foods? I'm thinking now, I don't think I could count more than 24 foods that I eat.
Well, I don't think you do, Jack, because if anyone here was like, you're one dish away from a jacket potato and beans and cheese diet only.
All I've seen Jack eat is bananas.
That's
Listen,
true.
What did I have for lunch today?
Pork pies.
Beans on toast, baby.
I just did this story because I felt like we had a young Jack Harris on our hands.
Yeah.
And guys, that's my story. So I guess you could say it's time to hit the eject.
With the click as well.
Finally, it's time for round three, the missing words round. I'm going to read out some headlines from the past week and you just need to fill in the missing words. So first up, we have, what keeps surviving everything life throws at them?
Oh, I know this one. Mm? It's Eamon Holmes.
You're not wrong.
Can be Badenoch, unfortunately.
People named Nigel.
Is it circus knife throwing assistants?
Okay, the answer is, world's oldest chicken keeps surviving everything life throws at them. So this is Pearl. Wow. She's a 14-year-old hen from Texas, and she's become the world's oldest chicken, according to the Guinness World Records. But her owner does admit she's the oldest chicken whose owner bothered filling out the paperwork. So
there's probably loads of chickens that are still...
There's probably a lot of old chickens.
By default.
What's been thrown at Pearl, can I ask him?
Jack, what hasn't been thrown at Pearl the chicken? She once broke her leg fleeing a raccoon attack. She suffered bouts of chicken pox... Who knew chickens could actually get that?
I think they just call it pox.
Arthritis and pneumonia. Her fellow hens have tried to kill her. And as if things weren't bad enough, her best friend is a mop. So she's basically experienced the equivalent of like two EastEnders series.
Yeah, the mop bit is the end of the last series.
Okay, next missing word. Newly crowned princess has what made in her honour?
A sandwich.
Oh, you're not far off. Does anyone else have any suggestions? What? You guys are doing well.
I was going to say like Netflix interview documentary. I don't know. I'm trying to do a Meghan Markle thing, but I'm not. I honestly don't know much about it.
Newly Crowned Princess has the 302nd most popular show on Netflix made in her honour.
Lovely.
Nice.
Is it Village Sacrifice?
Retro.
Yeah.
You've got to bring those back.
Yeah.
Newly Crowned Princess has butter sculpture made in her honour. You should have known.
Should have guessed this. Yeah. There's so many
close
with
a sandwich.
I can't believe it is butter.
Basically. Nice. So this is the Minnesota dairy community. They crown the Princess K of the Milky Way every year. Her first official duty was to wrap up warm and sit in a rotating studio at 4 degrees Celsius as fairgoers gathered to watch a man sculpt her likeness from a 90-pound block of salted butter. So it's basically like the end of Midsummer, but a bit more slippery.
Amazing.
Oh, great.
Okay, final missing word. British people have forgotten how to what?
Behave politely.
Behave outside a hotel.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Is it British people have forgotten how to speak proper and that?
Yeah. Have British people forgotten how to queue? Because I feel like queuing's
You've
on
got
there.
It.
Is it that?
Oh, it's actually.
It's British people have forgotten how to queue for the bus.
Oh, yeah.
First Bus, which is one of the UK's largest public transport operators, have had a lot of reports that orderly lines are being abandoned. One of them said, we ask passengers to be mindful and considerate and get back to that classic British pastime of good old-fashioned queuing. And that quote is from Simon Matheson, the firm's director of operational excellence, which is the title of someone who kicked up a fuss when he missed out on the position of director of operations. He's added on the
I respect that. I like my operations to be excellent.
I would say I kind of support that you kind of just have to let people in bus queues.
Wow.
And the country. And moving on.
We posted this missing word round on our social media channels, and congratulations to TomJackson163 on Instagram, who made us laugh with their response when they said, British people have forgotten how to amusingly fill in the blanks. He went meta there.
Yeah, got us there, to be fair.
It's pretty good.
It's really nice being seen.
Follow Have I Got News For You on Instagram and Twitter so you can enter our missing word round when we return in October for another series.
Thank you for listening to In The News this week. If you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
For updates on the show, make sure you're following Have I Got News For You on Instagram, TikTok and Twitter.
You can also get in touch with us by emailing podcasts@hattrick.com. That's hattrick with two T's.
Make sure you follow or subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it now. And we'll see you here for another series of both the TV show and the podcast in October. Guys, you know what to say.
Oh, no.
For the last time this series, hit the eject.
In the News This Week is presented by Jack Harris, Queenie Miller, Emerald Paston and Mike Raymond. The producer is Diggory Waite. The executive producer is Claire Broughton. And the music is by Big George. In the News This Week is a Hattrick podcast.